The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Merkle Media.
Flashback Fridays here on Macroaggressions. We're going back to December 6th, 2020, episode number 79, The Most Dangerous Man in the World, my interview with David Icke. Hey, if you're looking to convert some of your soon-to-be hyperinflated and worthless fiat currency or your retirement account into precious metals like gold and silver, go to the website www.macroaggressions.gold. Tony Arterburn will hook you up. Now, please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate your support. We know you have a lot of options out there, and we couldn't do this without the amazing support of our sponsors. My Patriot Supply has jumped in to help us in 2020. And boy, if there was ever an advertisement for getting yourself prepared for the inevitable, it is 2020. They have all kinds of products available to you. You can get food, emergency survival food, long-term, short-term, vegetable kits, survival items, water filtration, air purification. They've got all kinds of things there. They have shipping available inside the United States for free, over $100 if you purchase over $100, and they have international shipping available as well. So if you want to take a look, support the show, go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com, and they will give you $100 off a four-week supply of food. Well, if ever there was somebody to come on and explain the insanity that we are experiencing right now, it would be David Icke. And David, you and I, it's good to see you again. And, you know, for the last 10 years or so, we've been talking about the what you've described as the totalitarian tiptoe. It's not, it's incremental changes to society that instead of going from A to Z, you go A to B, B to C, C to D. Everything seems to stick. Nobody seems the wiser. Nobody catches on. But in 2020, it seems like they've thrown this playbook out.
It's the totalitarian sprint now.
Right. Well, I wonder, is that coming from a place of strength on their part or a place of weakness? Because it seems like they have decided that every insane agenda that they've ever dreamed up, they're trying to cram into 2020 on the back of this coronavirus scam. So do we approach this, or do we see their behavior as something of a weakness for them? Or are they in a position of strength? We see Klaus Schwab rolling out his Great Reset and things like that. And it appears that they've put everything 2030, no more. 2025, maybe. 2022, who knows? It seems like everything's been ramped up. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think they are and have always been in a race between getting where they want to go in terms of human perceptual control, which is a connection for the human brain to AI. Thank you, Elon Musk. It's very kind of it.
Yeah.
And the awakening of humanity to actually what's going on. So they know, and they've always known, that there is a time scale that they have to compete with, which is, will humanity wake up before, in enough numbers, before they've reached that point of perceptual control, which is designed to move from manipulating perception via control of information to a direct link between the human brain and AI, so the perceptions will not be manipulated, they'll just come direct. And they've chosen in 2020, I've used this analogy a few times, of it's like a 5,000-meter race. And they're in the pack. They're hidden in the pack. And then they get to 200 meters out, and they, at some point, have got to make a break for the line. And that's what 2020 is. It's a break for the line. And if you watch an athletics race like that, the one who breaks from the pack and sprints for the line has pretty much got to get to the line before they get caught. Because if they get caught, they're almost certainly going to get passed. And that's the kind of analogy that I think fits 2020. All these things that I've been writing about for 30 years and saying, this is the plan, this is where it's meant to go, which have been dismissed as conspiracy theories and all the rest of it and madness, are now actually being proposed by the very people behind what I call this global cult. And this is, you mentioned one guy, Klaus Schwab. Well, here's his book, COVID-19, The Great Reset. The Great Reset being a massive transformation of human society in the image of a global fascist dictatorship. So what has been in my books up there all these years, as this is the plan, these people are now saying this is what we want openly. Yeah. And when you break for the line like that, in this situation, you know that, I mean, I've said years ago, when people said, you know, how do you think it's going to go? I said, well, it's got to get really bad before enough people wake up and see it. Because and the point is that they operate under the radar. They operate outside of human conscious awareness of what's going on. What they've done in 2020 is they've broken the surface, which they had to at some point. I mean, if you're going to transform human society, there comes a point where you have to transform it in a way that people can see it being transformed. So once they break the surface, they are aware that they have got to get everything, kind of appropriate word, locked down as fast as they possibly can. And so they're throwing everything at us. And one of the reasons for this is momentum. You make it happen so fast that people who've not followed this and have not done the research don't kind of see what's going on. And I see this. In fact, I've just been watching a few videos of the British media. You know, I am a bit of a masochist in that sense, as you can imagine. And what's happening here is that because of the extremes and the way that what the government is doing, we're obviously in a second lockdown at the moment, bears no resemblance to the dangers of the alleged virus. But even some of the mainstream media, particularly the broadcast media, not the BBC, are looking at this and going, well, hold on a minute. This makes no sense. What are they doing? Why are they doing this? I mean, that's ridiculous. They've said this. That's obviously not true. But what they can't grasp is actually what's happening. And if you can't grasp the bigger picture of what's happening, you can't understand what's happening. So while the British media, for example, it'll be the same in some media in America, not much from what I've seen, they're looking at the government. They're looking at, in this case, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, and the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, and to an extent, their criminal advisors, a health advisor, Chief Medical Officer called Chris Whitty, and a Chief Scientific Advisor called Patrick Vallance. If any of them ever told the truth, their body would genetically implode from the shock. But they're still focused on that, you see. What's Whitty doing, advising this? Well, what's Johnson doing? But they can't see that what's happening in Britain is merely the British version of what's happening virtually everywhere else, because this whole thing is not only centrally controlled, it's been planned for so long. And all over the world, with Biden coming in, as it seems he probably will, with this 100% woke agenda, of course, he won't be president, he'll just be an empty shell. What you're going to see with Biden is this whole COVID extremism ramped up even more severely. So what they're doing, when you put it all together, is they're literally racing for the line, and they're trying to get everything in place to get control, not least technological control, as fast as possible. But also in the process of doing it in all these different areas fast and very quickly, to keep people in a state of confusion. I mean, more and more people are saying that there's something not right here. There's a scam going on here. Why are they doing this? Why are they lying to us? But they're not yet grasped in large enough numbers, actually, what is happening. And that the aim of all this is to get these pillars of control in place before that awareness of the scale and nature of what's happening dawns on enough people to make a difference.
Yeah, and here in the U.S., it's funny that you have a conversation with somebody that, like you said, they understand that there's something wrong. They can't quite put their finger on it, and I want to have a conversation with them about the mask situation, but I find myself that I have to go and have a complete backstory to what the mask is, that it's not about the mask itself, it's symbolic, and that it ties into a much larger agenda, and I can't boil this down to a 90-second conversation with somebody that I'm quickly interacting with. It seems like I have to unpack everything. But now I start to see things coming out in the media talking about how through Operation Warp Speed that Trump was talked about involving the military in the rolling out of a coronavirus vaccine. And they say things like the vaccine would need to be administered countrywide within 24 hours. And that should give everybody, that should be red flags and sirens going off everywhere, because that to me symbolizes, it just shows they want to get it done fast before the word can get out around the world that, hey, there's massive side effects, there's huge problems with this. It seems to me like the sheep are sort of waking up. Is it possible they could overplay their hand by rushing something like a mandatory vaccine too quickly?
Well, I think they have overplayed their hand, because after what I've just said, they're trying to get this all in place as fast as possible. But in doing that, you can alert people to the fact that something's not right, that if you played it out slower, maybe not so many people would suss it. But because of the way they're operating, I mean, I've seen it, mate. You know, since when I came out in March, in the series of interviews that got me banned from all and sundry on the mainstream internet platforms, and I was talking about the fact that there is no virus, it's a scam, and that the vaccinations, the vaccine, was the contents of it, was already sitting there, and the pandemic scam had been played to justify it. When I was talking about all of these things, I mean, you know, I mean, even in the alternative media, I was crazy. But as these months have unfolded to present time, more and more and more people are starting to question the fundamentals of what this is all about. And increasing numbers of people, well, actually, is there a virus? Because, okay, how do you know there's a virus? Oh, it's all the cases. Okay, so where are the cases coming from? Well, the tests. Well, the test, the RT-PCR test, is not testing for a virus. The creator of it, Carey Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize for inventing the PCR test, said publicly, he was talking about HIV at the time, you can't detect free infectious viruses with the PCR test. You can't do it. Because he was saying at the time, they're using the PCR test for testing for HIV. You can't. It doesn't do that. So this test is actually central to the scam. Because the RT-PCR test takes a tiny, minuscule, minute piece of genetic material, which they say contains the disease. But they've never isolated the disease and showed it to exist. The virus. So the PCR test takes this tiny piece of genetic material and it amplifies it, as they call it. And the more it amplifies it, the more of that genetic material, which, as you know, at least one doctor said, if you amplify the sample enough times with the PCR test, everyone will test positive eventually. Because you're pulling out more and more genetic material from the sample that people have in their bodies. Not a disease, not an illness, just genetic material. And so what they do is they amplify the sample. Now, Fauci, and even this is not true, but some time ago, Fauci said anything 30 to 35 amplifications of this test is a waste of time. Because you're basically, you're never going to find what you're looking for because all this other genetic material is being pulled out, which the test will pick up and test positive for, and not the stuff you say you're looking for. Well, the National Health Service in Britain and many other countries is using 45 cycles of amplification. And of course, with that, you're going to ping so many cases, which you're then going to call cases of the virus, which are not cases of the virus at all, none to do with the virus. So the foundation of the cases is a test not testing for the virus. And then you look at how many people have no symptoms. Almost the vast majority of people have no symptoms. Why? Because there's nothing wrong with them. Because the test hasn't tested for an infectious agent, as its inventor said it can't. And then you have this scam again, that if you've tested positive with a test not testing for the virus and then you die, sometimes of anything, but sometimes, you know, indefinitely other times within 28 days of the test, then COVID-19 goes on your death certificate. Even if the only evidence of it is you've tested positive for the SARS-CoV-2 virus with a test not testing for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So you put all this together and then you look at the figures, even the manipulated figures worldwide, and the percentage chances of going from alleged infection to fatality is absolutely bloody minute. So you put all this together, and then we come to the point you've raised, the vaccine. Why did Bill Gates, well, why the hell is Bill Gates having anything to do with it? He's a software salesman. But Bill Gates came out early on and said, the world can't go back to how it was before. They have no intention of letting it. Unless every man, woman, and child is vaccinated with this vaccine. What? A vaccine for a virus you've never isolated and shown to exist, that you are creating cases with a test not testing for the virus, and you're scamming death certificates. And even if we accept your figures, the chances of dying of this thing are minute. And you say we can't go back to a normal life without every man, woman, and child on the planet is vaccinated with this thing. And then as you start to get pushback, they're going to get a lot of pushback. And you start to go in the direction in all these different countries now, including Britain, of mandatory vaccinations. What? So now you want to mandate a vaccine which has been produced in record time, actually only in theory, that, like I say, where the contents were sitting there waiting for the pandemic to provide the excuse. But you want to mandate a vaccine, which is fascism. There's no other way of describing it. If you can't decide what goes in your own body, you're in a fascist state. For a virus you've never shown to exist, that you scan with a test, and even if we accept your figures, is virtually no danger to anyone. So you take a breath and you look at that and you say, well, hold on a minute. Well, clearly this vaccine's nothing to do with a coronavirus, which they've never produced a vaccine for a coronavirus. Now, suddenly they do in record time. So why is it that they want this vaccine into every man, woman, and child on the planet? Because it's nothing to do with health. It's to do with control. And in considerable part, it's about transforming the nature of the very human form from a biological state to a synthetic biological state, human 2.0. And this is what they want. And there are other reasons for it too, including a sterilization agent, I have no doubt whatsoever, which is all part of this transformation of the human form agenda. So it makes no sense. And the reason it makes no sense is because they're lying to us. And if people just take a step back and just look at it calmly, they'll see that the reason it makes no sense is because what they're telling us is a cover story to get what they want, which is to get access to the bodies of every man, woman, and child on the planet for stunningly sinister reasons.
Now, I wasn't alive when the Black Death was rolling through the world, but I would imagine that it didn't need a public relations department to get the word out that it was dangerous and deadly. Unfortunately, this one seems to need that. I view the role of the mainstream media in this as co-conspirators. They are intertwined in this. They have intentionally, well, first of all, we've been dumbed down for a long, long time to the point where we're willing to accept the the insanity of this all. Not us, of course, but I mean, the vast majority of people, they don't understand what's happening. I'd be interested to know, here in the United States, the role of the media is reprehensible. They are an enemy, as far as I'm concerned. And I had a good talk with Ross Ashcroft, who does Renegade Inc. In the UK, and he used to work for the BBC, and he told me about the way it used to work for him.
Yeah, I used to work for the BBC. Yeah.
Yeah. He said that, and I was on his show about a year or year and a half ago in London, and we were talking offset, and he said, oh, this was a great interview. We were talking about interesting things, but if this had happened on the BBC, I'd have a producer in my ear telling me, get him off this topic, switch the topic. And if I didn't, I'd be taken upstairs after the interview was over and have a 3-person panel that would walk me through what my problem, what I need to do in the future and why I can't do it. The media, what is the media's role in this from your perspective?
Well, it's real simple. If you're going to control the best part of 8 billion people. And at the core of the core, you could get your group of fully aware inner core people in a single room, then you're not going to be able to dictate physically to every man, woman, and child on the planet. You're not being able to do it. So you don't try. You can do it in certain areas. You can, through your military and through your law enforcement. But you can't manipulate or force the best part of 8 billion people to do what you want if they choose not to do it. So to get them to choose to do it, or at least be in fear of not doing it, you control their perception. And what's the process of perception? Information received is processed. In a lot of people, it's not even processed. And from that information, you form perception. And from your perception comes your behavior. Behavior is simply a manifestation of perception. You know, people acquiesced to house arrest on a massive billions scale in the spring because their perception was one of two things, basically. One, the great vast majority, there's a deadly virus, so the only way to protect ourselves and our families is to accept what the government says and go under house arrest. And the other group was those that didn't buy it, or at least didn't buy it entirely, but were in fear, perception, of obeying authority. And so they, more reluctantly, but they still went into under house arrest. That's how perception works. You control the perception, you control behavior. And this whole pandemic hoax is being driven by psychologists and perception manipulators. The British government has, in its so-called cabinet office, actually owns a private company called the Behavioral Insights Team, which comes out of all this nudge stuff with Cass Sunstein in America, nudging behavior down channels of that you want them to take. It's in fact the Behavioral Insights Team is known as the nudge unit.
Yeah.
From Cass Sunstein's book, another guy called Thaler, who wrote this book Nudge. And who of the World Health Organization appointed to help them in manipulating behavior? Cass Sunstein. It's a very small world when you you get into these people. So the masks, for instance, in Britain, mandatory in shops and on public transport and so on. I've never worn one. That will be the bloody day. One of the people that was pushing this publicly must have mandatory masks. Was a British government science advisor who was nothing to do with medicine. Her name was Susan Mikey, Professor Susan Mikey. She's a professor of psychology. It's all psychology. The social distancing is all psychology. The masks is psychology, symbolizing silence, symbolizing submission, affecting the oxygen reaching the brain, which some neurologists, one in particular, has come out and said this is going to be devastating, particularly for young young people and children, because at that point of development in their lives, they their bodies need more oxygen than older people. So you deny them that oxygen, it's going to affect the brain. And she was going as far as to say, you know, if this goes on, then 20, 30 years from now, you're going to be seeing a lot of Alzheimer's and psychological development of the brain problems in people 20, 30 years from now, which will be young people today, children today. It's all systematic. You know, I did a lot of research over a long period of time into mind control and MK Ultra, the infamous mind control project in America and Canada too, through the military and government and intelligence networks. And one of the people who was a survivor of MKUltra contacted me a few weeks ago and pointed out that when her daughter was born in captivity in MKUltra, when she was in MKUltra, they made her daughter, wear a mask from the age of two.
Whoa.
Because it was designed, she said, to, and this is what this is all about too, the public version now, to delete a sense of individuality and also to affect the brain and the oxygen reaching the brains so that the brain doesn't form properly and makes control of the perceptions even more powerful. Now, she told me that before this neurologist came out and said, these masks are going to cause devastation to people, particularly the young, because of the lack of oxygen reaching the brain. So this is all systematic. And, you know, it's difficult for people, and I do understand it, because they've never in their own life experience come across pure, undiluted, beyond description evil. They can't grasp the nature of the evil, which I define as the absence of love in the case of this cult, the complete absence of love. They can't grasp that anyone could be that evil. But they are. This is why they do what they do. And they're psychopaths. They're super psychopaths. And when you look at the traits, the character traits, the official character traits of a psychopath, right at the top there is lack of empathy, an impossibility of putting yourself in the feelings of those you affect so that it acts as a fail-safe mechanism on your own behavior. They have no fail-safe mechanism because of their pure evil and extreme psychopathy. They have no emotional consequence for whatever they do. So if you look at someone, I'll give you a great example. If you look at someone like Bill Gates, he has been campaigning and orchestrating. He's still a gopher, but he's a very up there gopher in terms of this whole pandemic. He has orchestrated a situation which has killed enormous numbers of people because of the lockdown, not the virus, that has destroyed the lives, the livelihoods, and the well-being of billions of people. And the idea is that as a result of all this, the human race goes into a level of fascist dictatorship that would even embarrass people like Hitler and Goebbels. Now, Bill Gates, will have no emotional consequence for that. It will not affect him in any way as he surveys the chaos and the catastrophe that he has played such a role in creating. He has no emotional consequence for putting a vaccine into people that is going to devastate their health and their psychology. No problem. They get off on it. And it's grasping the scale of this dark mentality that in the end can help you grasp what's actually happening. Because don't tell me they'd never do that. Of course, they are doing it in front of your face now.
Yeah, I get the feeling that the Tavistock Institute is involved in this in some way, shape, or form. It seems to have their fingerprints all over it. The psychological operation that this is not a haphazard type of operation that's been rolled out. It seems that it's been, as you mentioned, planned well in advance. Not just the vaccines, but the concepts for it. We have Fauci talking about 2017, saying Trump's going to have himself a pandemic on his hands at some point. We have Bill Gates talking about, well, just wait till the second wave comes. That'll get their attention with his little dumb laugh and things like that. This is a 360 degree attack on humanity. The role of these non-governmental organizations seems to fly under the radar. Atlantic Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg, all of these German Marshall Fund, all of these groups. And of course, they've been instrumental in attacking you as well. They've pushed very heavily to have you deplatformed everywhere that they can. We know that it's coming from the, what's the role of these NGOs in fueling this pandemic, pandemic?
First of all, just to mention or respond to something you kind of brought up there. The other thing to understand for people who are new to this is that they're not reacting to events. You know, what's happening now has been in my books for decades in terms of where the world's going. Now, that tells you something immediately. Current events are not random. How could I uncover that this whole world was going to change as it's changing? If it were random, I couldn't, unless I got very, very lucky.
Right.
So it's not random. It wasn't random that George Orwell was so accurate with his police state. Yeah. It wasn't random that Aldous Huxley was so accurate with his Brave New World and all the genetic and drug manipulation and psychological manipulation that he was talking about. This has been a long planned. So 2020, we need that. This needs to be imposed in 2020. So what they do in the run-up to 2020 over the years is they put into place all the things they need. And to the public, none of these is connected. To most of the politicians, none of these is connected. And then they get to 2020 and it's in place. Everything they need is in place to impose what they want. So a very simple example, I could give you many. They changed the definition of a pandemic. So under the old definition of a pandemic, this is not a pandemic. Well, it's not a pandemic anyway, but they couldn't have justified it. Mm-hmm. So they changed the criteria, knowing 2020 was coming. There was a thing on the davidicke.com this week, which was a white paper issued by the government in the summer of 2019, pledging its support and promoting what they called the fourth industrial revolution, which is what Klaus Schwab and these psychopaths talk about, the fourth industrial revolution, which their name for it now is the Great Reset. So in the summer of 2019, again, you had this process being started and promoted with the insiders knowing that what was coming was going to be an excuse to introduce this fourth industrial revolution, this global fascist state. So that's how it works. And how can they do it? Well, and in terms of all these NGOs, well, the world is controlled by a web of interconnected organizations. So you have like a spider's web. In the center of the web, you have the spider, which is the inner core of this cult, operates in the shadows, obviously. And then immediately around the spider in this web, all the strands of the web. And each of these strands represents a secret society, a semi-secret group, or further out in the public arena, a government agency, the banking system, corporations, media ownerships, and so on. The strands in the web immediately around the spider, they're the big insider secret societies, but many of which people will never even have heard of, some of which don't even have names, makes them harder to identify. And at that level, they know the picture. They know what the game is and where it's meant to go and why. And then as you come out from this spider in the web, still in the hidden part of the web, you hit all the secret societies that we know about. The Freemasons, I'm talking about the inner core, the Knights of Malta, the Knights Templar, and the inner core of the Jesuit order, and so on. And they are compartmentalized in degrees, levels of knowledge. So even within them, the great majority don't know the big picture, only the tiny few. And then eventually you meet what I call the cusp organizations. These are the semi-secret groups which take the spider agenda and then project it into the public arena, the world of the scene. So these are the Bilderberg Group. Klaus Schwab was on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group. It's the Council on Foreign Relations in America. It's the Royal Institute of International Affairs in London. It's the Trilateral Commission, created by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski in 1972-73. It's the Club of Rome that was created in the 1960s specifically to exploit the environment and environmental concerns to justify transformation of global society into a fascistic communistic state. And out of that came, of course, the hopes of human-caused global warming. So then you come out through these cusp organizations into the public arena, to governments, to government agencies, the banking system, and so on. And awash within the public arena are all these think tanks. I've said in the books all over these years, watch the frickin' think tanks, because they are the vehicle for manipulating the spider's agenda into reality. And whether it's the think tank on the environment, or it's the think tank like the neocons, the Project for the New American Century, the American institutes of various kinds, they are manipulating policy so that the policy coming out through governments is the policy of the cult, the policy of the spider, and so. Another thing that's worth adding here is that this cult has to keep producing cover stories to hide the fact that it's all orchestrated. Mm-hmm. So what it does is it uses front people. I had a book published in August, and I started writing it in October of 2019. And 80% of the book was written before the pandemic hoax kicked off, and I was able to put a lot of stuff in the book about all that and what it was really about. The reason I raised that is in the first 80% of the book, before the pandemic kicked off, Bill Gates had mention after mention after mention, because his Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is funding virtually everything that moves in relation to this this cult agenda. And so if you take the technology side of it too, if you look at this technology that's rolling out, creating what's known as the smart grid, which is leading towards connecting AI to the human brain, there's not a point where people sit around a table strumming their fingers, waiting for some geek in a garage in Silicon Valley to invent the next level of technology that they need to push their agenda on. No, it just rolls out seamlessly and ever quicker now. Yeah. Why? Because it's been sitting there. It's not coming out from these companies. It's coming out through these companies. It's coming out of the underground bases and the secret projects. And when you're doing that, you need to hide that fact. So you have cover stories. So you'll have a Bill Gates, or you'll have, in terms of the platforms, you'll have a Zuckerberg, you'll have a Bezos, and a Brin and Page at Google. And they provide the cover story for how this technology and these Silicon Valley operations came into being. But then you've got another example of this, which is George Soros. So George Soros is an agent of the cult, just like Gates. And so he can become phenomenally rich, just like Gates. But there's a rider to that. And that is that you'll become phenomenally rich, yes. But under the guise of philanthropy, you've got to spend a vast chunk of that wealth on advancing agenda projects. Hiding the fact that they're agenda projects, because you're just a nice person who cares about the world. So what you have with Bill Gates is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which he said was based on the Rockefeller Foundation. Absolutely was. The Rockefellers and the Gates families have been bosom buddies for a very long time. In fact, I've seen genealogy that claims that if you go back far enough, the Gates family and the Rockefeller family fuse into the same bloodline. And who created World Health Organization? Well, the Rockefellers did. Who runs it now? Bill Gates, because he's the biggest funder. All these things connect. And then you've got George Soros. And George Soros has got this big heart. He just cares about human justice and fairness, to the point where he said publicly at one point, I don't take into account the social consequences of what I do. I'm just here to make money, right? So this guy makes a fortune. And people say, well, he's a brilliant financier. Well, I'd be a brilliant financier if I knew when the markets were going up, for instance, and I knew when they were going down, because those that owned me were making them go up and down. You get it dead easy to make money doing that. You get into this when it's about to go up. You get out of it when it's about to go down. And again, with Soros, there's a rider. And these people basically, often, though Gates has a vast portfolio of what he funds for the cult, but basically they have areas of specialization. And the big specialization of Gates, of course, is control of global health policy. But with Soros, it's funding the takeover of the original genuine liberal left by the woke mentality, which is the last thing the woke mentality is liberal. And so you have Gates funding all these different projects, the tune of phenomenal amounts of money. I mean, just staggering. And then you have Soros, through his Open Society Foundations, who is funding all these woke organizations that have hijacked the traditional left and act in fascistic ways. So he's a massive funder of Black Lives Matter, which is a front for the cult. To divide America and rule America via racial divisions and so on, and this is how it all works. And so if you look at the funding of these think tanks and where their money's coming from, are these front organizations for the cult? It's invariably coming from billionaires and billionaire corporations through quote philanthropy, and in the end, it's all orchestrated from a central point.
You mentioned an interesting thing. It was talking about the stories of these big tech companies. And I found that they always have, there's either two versions of the story. Either it started in a dorm room in Harvard by a freshman who winds up dropping out, i.e. Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg, or it starts in a garage in Silicon Valley, like Google did, and like Hewlett-Packard did, and IBM, all these companies that sort of had this front story. There's one component to this, to this 360-degree control grid of society that I think a lot of people are having a hard time fitting in with this coronavirus situation and this transformation of society and where it fits in this. And that is the role of artificial intelligence. We don't know, most people don't even know what that means. It just sounds like really powerful computers that take a bunch of data in and crunch it. What is the actual role moving forward of artificial intelligence in running this whole operation?
Well, it's designed to run the whole thing. Just very quickly, something you just brought up. I watched a two-part series on the BBC, so it wasn't very good. It was the BBC, but it was about Silicon Valley. And I'll never forget it. In one of the programs, right, it was a sequence of garage doors. And they went through these garage doors saying what now major corporation or development technologically had been had started behind these different garage doors in Silicon Valley. You know, and I had this picture of members of the cult sitting around a table saying, guys, too many garage doors.
Right.
We need another cover story.
They're not very creative, are they? They run the same play over and over.
Yeah, is that amazing? So AI. Well, I see, AI everywhere being talked about, but I don't hear this question. What is AI? Mm-hmm. And, I go into this in the books in great detail. There are different levels of AI. There's algorithms, of course. That's one level. There's what they call learning AI, and what they're doing is something else that doesn't get talked about much. People talk about people's privacy and private data being trawled by Facebook and Google and Amazon, all these people. And they say, oh, you know, this invasion of privacy. It's more than that. Because all these postings and comments and actions that people post on the internet, it's all going into AI and this level of learning AI. And so this learning AI is already knows more about humans than humans do. Because of the information that they, what makes humans tick, how do humans think, how do their emotions work? If you do A, what will be the human reaction to A? If you do B, what will be the human reaction to B? Again, we're back to manipulating perception by understanding how perception works and how emotions work and thought processes work. So that's another level of AI. But, you know, getting deeper in the rabbit hole, I've been researching over 30 years all different levels of this, including what's behind the spider. And behind the spider is not human. You know, people immediately go, oh, what do you mean it's not human? Well, hold on a minute. Almost everything in existence is not human. You know, we are experiencing not a world in the sense of an infinite world, in the sense of what we see, we are experiencing the world of the scene is just a tiny band of frequency called visible light with a smear of the electromagnetic spectrum. That's all we could see. So everything that exists outside that smear, it's so tiny, this frequency band of human sight is invisible to us. So, yeah. You look at the extraordinary variety of form on Earth within this tiny band of frequency, different human form, different animal forms, etc. And then you think, well, what's the potential for different forms and different species and different realms and realities beyond this slither of visible light, which is all that we can see? And when you do research into ancient cultures, and then you add them to the basic foundations of religious stories, so many common themes among them, you see this, again, common theme among them all, of some non-human force that's manipulating human society, whether it's the Zulus in South Africa, or the Aboriginals, or the Native Americans, or the Islamic theme of the jinn, or the Gnostic theme of the archons, which is a Greek word meaning rulers. They talk about this non-human force that's manipulating human society via this cult that operates within the realm of human society and does the bidding of this non-human force. And this is the reason that when you research these rich and famous people again and again, it will lead you into Satanism and satanic ritual. Hollywood, I rest my case. And into pedophilia. Hollywood, I rest my case. Because these rituals, these satanic rituals, which include human sacrifice rituals, been going on since the ancient world, did it in the open in the ancient world, then, you know, humanity grew up and matured to the point where they weren't having it, and it's went underground, which is where it still is. But these rituals, and I've talked to so many people over the years who've taken part in these rituals, and some mostly against their will. And what the rituals are is an interaction between the cultists in our reality and these non-human, this non-human force, which so many ancient societies kind of perceived in terms of gods, the gods. Mm-hmm. What did they say in the ancient world? Making sacrifices to the gods. What did they sacrifice? They sacrificed, what was the term? Young virgins. What was young virgins a code for? Children. And it's still going on, but in the shadows now. And so when you look at the descriptions of this non-human force, it does take form. Two of the forms that are mentioned by the Gnostics in a stash of amazing writings that were found in an earthen jar in Egypt, about 70 miles north of Luxor, a place called Nag Hammadi, in 1945. About a fifth of those writings that were found, it was said to have been put in that earthen jar, maybe about 400 AD, something like that. They describe a non-human force called archons, like I say, rulers, which they say are manipulating human society. And they say in them that this force does take form, and two of the major forms it takes are serpentine, reptilian, and wait for this, really. It describes the other major form as like a gray fetus with big black eyes, which is a classic description all these decades later of the so-called grays in UFO lore. Anyway, but the point where I'm leading this is they say that in their base form, these archons are merely consciousness, energy. And they can wrap that in a form, just as our consciousness is wrapped in this form at the moment for a brief human experience. But the base form is just consciousness, awareness. And it's an awareness in an incredibly distorted state, hence it's psychopathic and evil. And so going back to AI and what it is, there's algorithmic AI. There is learning AI, and I say there's another level of AI, which is this force. And the connection of the human mind, the human brain, and the human body in general to AI is ultimately designed for this non-human force, which the Gnostics called archons, to infiltrate the human psyche and take it over. I call it the assimilation of human consciousness into this archontic force. So it's much, much bigger and much, much deeper than just connecting to computers. It's much more profound. And this has been building up for so long, thousands and thousands of years, this has been building up. And as people have come, served the cult, died, others have come in, served the cult, died, the common cement, the common coordinating force through all these periods of come, go, is this archontic force. It's been orchestrating it all. So this cult is the human vehicle, the human expression of something much deeper and non-human. The point being, however, that if they had the power, even if this force had the power just to take over, it would have done so a long time ago. But it can't, not without human cooperation and acquiescence. And that's what is bringing this in. The cult can say, this is what we want you to do, or order you to do it. But the cult can't make you do it if you refuse to do it. Fascism is not introduced by fascists. There's not enough of them. Fascism is introduced by the population acquiescing to fascism. And this cult agenda is being introduced by mass human acquiescence to it. And if we stop doing it, they can't do it. And we're at a point now where we either stop doing it, stop cooperating with our own enslavement, or this is going to reach its conclusion. It's a big time of choice. And the encouraging thing is, as we talked about earlier, the rush to the line, because of the nature of putting itself in public display, has alerted. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for decades, and when I started out, God dear, it was a very lonely road. But I've watched in 2020 enormous numbers of people. People you'd never think would either go in this direction, ever go in this direction, now starting to look at the world in a completely different way and contemplate possibility they would never have contemplated before. So that's very encouraging. But, you know, this is moving fast. We have to move fast. And we have to convert, oh, I'm starting to get it, with, and I'm not cooperating with it. I'm not doing it. I'm not obeying my own enslavement. And then when that really starts, then we'll see where the real power is. And it's not with this cult.
Yeah. I've watched interviews with Jordy Rose, the founder of D-Wave, talking about his supercomputer company that they were opening up other dimensions and extracting information from them. That sounds to me a whole lot like the blending of our technology with this Archon force that is always in the background. I've done enough DMT and ayahuasca and mushrooms to know that there is a world beyond our eyes. That,
oh, yes.
Dismiss this sort of thing as conspiratorial nonsense and believing in aliens and blah, blah, blah. But there is something that flows through this world that we cannot see, but it is very real. It is as real as the ground beneath our feet. And when you experience it, when you have these sorts of connections with a new dimension, so to speak,
yeah,
it never leaves you. You may not be able to access it on a minute-to-minute basis, but you never forget it. You never forget the way you feel. I always felt a combination of insignificance at the vastness and the amazingness of this out there, while also feeling connected and part of it as well. And that gave me a sense of comfort. I didn't understand it. I suppose I'm not supposed to understand it. But working my way through it, it's very real. And I know that people are very dismissive of these sorts of things when we get into the woo-woo and all of that. And they try to brand us as conspiracy theorists or whatever. But there is a world beyond our eyes. It's extremely important. You know, David, you've been doing this for 30 years, you tell the story of how you would walk down the street and people would laugh at you, cross the street to get away from, or laugh at you. And I have but one question remaining for you. Who's laughing now?
Well, some are still laughing, those that are completely asleep and utterly in denial. But, you know, there's that line, that Gandhi line. How does it go? First they laugh at you, then they attack you. It goes on like that, yeah. And then the last line is, and then you win,
right?
And I've been through all these different stages that Gandhi talked about, and what you've got now, and I know you're making progress. When you go from being ridiculed and being abused to being ignored, and once the media and the system is seeking to ignore you, you know they're deeply worried about you, and so they should be. So, if I just give a personal example of 2020, I've been a very, very controversial figure through all this. I've been banned from all and sundry, all the internet, major internet platforms, and I'm just one guy, and they're terrified of me. You know what they're terrified of? Terrified of the information getting circulated. That's what terrified of. And so any journalistic organization, particularly in Britain, where I'm rather controversial character over a very long period of time, as a journalistic exercise, you would have me on. You would say, even if you wanted to have a go at me, you'd have me on. Right. You know, you'd have me, well, you're being banned from this and banned from that and banned from the other. You know, come on, we want to talk to you. That's an obvious thing to do, but they won't. What happened is that we have a fascistic organization in Britain called Ofcom, Office of Communications. It's the broadcast regulator of the government. It was started by Tony Blair. That's how fascist it is. And they announced in the early part, since this pandemic was starting, and I was starting to come out and say this is a scam, that there must be no discussion in the broadcast media in Britain, for instance, that about the World Health Organization version of the pandemic not being true. You can't do it. There was a little radio station just outside London, and in that same period, and it had someone on whose opinion was that 5G was connected to this in some way. Well, Ofcom went absolutely spare, threatening in all directions that they must never have to do that again. So here you have a government censor, Ofcom, actually telling the mainstream broadcast media that they can't have questioning of the World Health Organization version of events. At the same time, Silicon Valley, Facebook, Google, YouTube, they openly announce that they're going to censor, this is back in the spring, anyone who posts things that are questioning or exposing the World Health Organization version of events. So you see the theme. And it's because their version of events is so ridiculous, so insane, so unsupportable by the evidence, and so, you know, destroyable by a modicum of research, that the only way they can protect it is by censoring and silencing and stopping the public hearing that that dismantling of the official story. And so all the way through this, right to present day, I haven't been out on the mainstream media. I've been in the mainstream media where they've been having a go at me and supporting the fact that I've been banned by Facebook and banned by YouTube. But I have not been asked on any broadcast media to comment or debate of anything. It's completely ignoring me as if it didn't exist. I'll tell you just a quick story. It happened yesterday. There's a national radio station in Britain called Talk Radio. I've been on it many times before, purchased by Murdoch, Rupert Murdoch. And even on YouTube, it was getting like, you know, my last two interviews on Talk Radio, I've got 6 million hits plus on YouTube. So it was a popular subject. And they have 24 hours a day to fill of silence. So in this whole period, you'd have me on. You would. I mean, it's just journalistic common sense, but they never have. And I was seeing a clip from a program yesterday, and this presenter was, you know, telling the story about how he was sitting on a train, and he was talking about the latest impositions of the government. And in a seat near him was what he described as a posh lawyer who started a conversation with him. And he said that the posh lawyer said, if you want to know what's going on, then I should go to a website of a skeptic of all this. And he couldn't even say, this presenter, davidicke.com, because that's clearly what the lawyer told him to go to. Instead, he said, oh, well, you know, this posh lawyer went all David Icke on me, you know. it's like the name that mustn't be spoken. Now, what that tells you is that this cult and its communications network is not as powerful as it would like to think it is. If it's terrified of people like me, then it ain't very powerful, is it? And what we need to do is keep going and not bow to the pressure to conform and the pressure to be silent. And one of the great things that's happening is what's that great line? Necessity is the mother of invention. And as these platforms in their various expressions have been banning people for questioning the official story of everything, so people have started creating new ones. So you have things like Parler, where the social media platform, which is getting bigger and bigger numbers as people move to that from Twitter and Facebook, And then there are video platforms which I put my videos on, which are starting to get really big numbers. Not quite what they were on YouTube, but getting there. So there's a lot of good things happening as well. And the worst thing we can do, with what we absolutely must not do, is fall into the trap of seeing ourselves as a victim and how it's not fair and how can they do this to us. But instead say, okay, what they're telling us is we're on the right track. What they're telling us is they're not as powerful as they'd like us to believe. So instead of, you know, I'm a victim, isn't it terrible? What are we going to do about it? And there's always a way. There's always a way if the will is there.
One of those ways is to get on iconic.com, get yourself a subscription. You can find my show, Macro Aggressions, there, along with many other great documentary movies, documentary series, all kinds of things. All of your work is there, of course, and people can check you out at davidicke.com. You're a super nice guy. You don't seem like the most dangerous man in the world, despite what the mainstream media would have us to believe. That's David Icke, everybody. Thanks for coming on, David. I appreciate your...
Thanks, guys.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.